So hopefully that provided kind of this general overview and started thinking about how we can be merging in the examples of school siting and the work at EOIDC. And so really this is just meant to be a short kind of overview that Joe will mostly do. I'm just going to get this started in terms of setting an agenda for research and practice that we'll then be able to discuss in our short remaining time together. Neither of us have relationships to disclose. And so really the idea of this is just to emphasize that there's this shared history that exists. It started with Hippocrates, who wrote Airs, Water, and Places, continued through the late 1800s with the sanitary reform movement. And it's really that public health, planning, and education all shared this local, place-based approach to well-being. Then, kind of around the early 1900s, they all became interested in scientific management and became increasingly professional and started to not work together quite as much. And then the interesting history starts around the 1960s, which is what's in this slide. And that's when there's started to be opportunities for reconnection, in large part because of equity issues. So with the civil rights movement, with the Great Society movement, and with healthy cities movement. So you can see all of these here in very small font, but that's the overall gist of what's going on. Then you also see right at the end of the slide that departments started to form, so that we got Health and Human Services, we have an education department there. And we see there's not much in the 80s, which is just this first column in this graph. And then there start to be a few kind of programs that people are trying out in the 90s and this most recent decade. And part of this is that this is just the federal role. And so quite kind of practically, the federal role in this is all newer. A lot of this has been happening on the local and state level for a lot of reasons, and a lot continues to happen more locally, but hopefully this starts to provide a perspective of what's going federally. So, oh, shoot, I have one more slide that I was supposed to talk about. Sorry. This is the description of what is going federally. So you can see that there's the education and the health that used to be part of the same department and then now two separate departments. And then you see the EPA, we see the Department of Transportation, we see Housing and Urban Development. Basically, the point of this is that there are lots of federal departments that are involved in different ways that can all be engaged in creating equitable urban environments and the point of this whole session.
Great. Again, this slide really is just trying to illustrate this idea of intersections. So, all of these agencies, hopefully are coming back together with some of these examples that Allison discussed, the Sustainable Communities Initiative with HUD, DOT, and the EPA, the Environmental Justice Initiative now with, 17 or 19 agencies that have come together. So, this is what we're left to navigate until we can really make those partnerships work, not just at a federal level, but at a local level. And, really the point here is to mention that, these interagency things are necessary but not sufficient. So how do we get to the real thing at the local level? And as you may have heard Tom Daschle mention yesterday, models are simply small replicas of the real thing. So how do we get to that real thing? And where do we start? And so I think it's clear from what Lacante and Regina presented and we've been talking about, really we have to start with participation and getting that local involvement and starting with youth because that's really what we're talking about is outcomes for youth. So I skipped the fourth framework slide. You're welcome. And I just want to throw out one example. So a lot of us in public health may have referred to these strategies, the Robert Wood Johnson Active Living Research. How many people have referenced these or somehow used them? A few people. Right, so this is a great template, a good framework for practice. How do we get started in building some of these partnerships? How do we act together? I just laid out all of their 31-point system and looked at who's supposed to be leading the way and who's supposed to be helping out. The point is that we have to first, I believe, get education back in the loop here, right? Because they've tended to function as a separate jurisdiction, which they are. But how do we really have that shared vision so that it's translated in terms of practice? So in terms of research, just quickly, so we did a little quick experiment here, not an experiment, a quick descriptive of some of the search terms that, you know, Allison had mentioned that were shared, some of the values both and practices. And so we looked in the education, so Education Journal was Eric. The JPL is the Journal of Planning Literature, which is kind of a clearing house for planning research and literature. And then PubMed, of course, our favorite. So we looked at the frequency of these keywords in those sources. And, you know, again, the point here, first, is that we see a lot more about kind of these values, the social capital, youth and development, civic engagements, you know, more the conceptual and theoretical than we actually see in practice. So practice of safe routes and joint use and school siting. And then we see, you know, this difference across the sectors and whether that reflects, you know, the true discourse, level of discourse as a percent of their total discourse, I don't know. But, I think the point is to emphasize that education has been talking a lot about it. As is health, and planners are somewhere in the pivot, somewhere in the middle. So we looked at social capital. We said we were going to talk a lot about it. We looked at that just in particular in the literature. And again, you know, it's very prevalent in the education literature, somewhat prevalent in health, but not much in urban planning. And then more interesting is this kind of gray literature versus peer-reviewed. So what we did was track that over time. And the point here is really just to follow, it's interesting, this gray literature, which is what Eric calls documents, which are, you know, basically kind of not peer-reviewed research papers and different, perhaps even opinion articles, but that really led the way, and that is what kind of started this discourse, at least within the education sector, for people to start actually doing research and doing peer review work on that topic of social capital. So you see this rise here in the peer review, whereas it kind of displaced the gray literature. And then you can make some judgments about which sector is following the other. But point again is, you know, to how do we sync all of our research efforts together? So just a conceptual depiction here of what I thought we saw from that little exercise in literature. You know, education is talking a lot about social capital in particular, and a lot of these values and practices that we discussed. Public health is talking equally, perhaps, about that, but city planning does not much. So here's really the key. So how do we get this into practice? And I just threw out a few statistics here, so this obviously doesn't represent the whole. But thinking about education, for example, so we've got 14,000 school districts in the country. There's 5,000 people employed at the Department of Education federally. You know, roughly 4 to 5 million teachers. I don't know the exact number there, but and lots of revenue, a huge amount of investment, and that's not just in the facilities, the capital part, but in the teaching and the pedagogy. In public health, we've got 2,600 local health departments, each expending $8.6 million annually with 73 employees. If we talk about Department of Human Health outlays, which includes tax incentives and whatnot, and Medicare and Medicaid, I mean, that's a massive number. So how do we leverage all of these different investments in these sectors towards a shared goal and a common vision? What I'm arguing here is that if we maintain this kind of traditional view of public health as a downstream reactor to the events that stem from from activities in these other sectors, we're not going to have much impact. So how do we expand our scope and rebrand ourselves really as an entity that we don't teach, but we do education and we're concerned about education. We don't do city planning per se, but we're city planners and vice versa. And so. You know, and we're not talking about just public sector here. We saw a great example of how really, you know, nonprofit sector has stepped up. And I think we have, 1.2 million CDOs in the country now. And a few of them are as good as EYODC, but EOYDC. But we definitely need to, again, leverage their investments. So what to do? I think I'll just leave this here, and we can start a discussion. And I think welcome your questions for all of us.